This is the Bulls Talk Podcast. I'm Casey Johnson, joined today by my NBC Sports Chicago teammates, Will Perdue and Rob Schaefer. Coming up on the show, we're going to take a look back at All-Star Weekend that Rob covered for our website, and also a look back at the first half of the season, which isn't really the first half. It's 59 games. And then we're going to get into the second half, or the final 23 games, with Will.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
So, let's start there. Rob, you were in Cleveland. You're back. Overall thoughts on the weekend for your second, only your second All-Star game, right? You covered Chicago in this, right?
Only my second All-Star game, covered Chicago. This felt like the first one, though, a little bit, because you're traveling, you're going to a new city, and I'd been to Cleveland a couple times. I'd actually covered a Bulls-Cavs game in Cleveland earlier this season. But overall thoughts on the weekend, really my biggest takeaway is it was just good to be back. Not quite, maybe not all the way back, not capital B back, but almost back. Just in the sense that people were congregating, people were coming together. The arena was full for, you know, a lot of the weekend events, a lot of media people there, a lot of NBA people there. Obviously, the NBA 75 thing was tremendously, tremendously cool to see all those guys honored. And a lot of them, you know, I would say at least the majority were in town, although I don't know the exact number. So that was the big takeaway, was that I'm not insinuating that the pandemic is over or even close. There were nods to it. There were protocols in place to keep everyone safe. But it did feel about as close to what the pre-pandemic world felt like, for me at least, in terms of an experience that I've had, a sports covering event experience. So that was cool. A lot of Bulls stuff to cover that kept me busy. So that was fun, too. That was different than the Chicago weekend, for sure. And, you know, the game itself, like, it's another entertaining All-Star game. They nailed this format. So there was a lot to like. I had a really good time. It was fun to, you know, be in the mix again.
Will, as someone who obviously has played against some of those legends that were presented at halftime yesterday, and not only played against, but played with some of them, what was your take on the 75th anniversary team and the way they were honored?
I really like that, because I think – The league as a whole does a really good job, in my opinion, of, you know, the Retired Players Association has improved, in my opinion, significantly. I think by, you know, talking about that, you know, 75th team, you know, they brought those guys back into the fold. I think it does a good job of helping the younger players from today put them in that atmosphere where they're connected, where they kind of are forced to interact. I like that. It's been pretty cool on social media to see a lot of these guys with some of the photos, you know, all the current, you know, Jason Tatum with all the former Celtics that were on that team, you know, to see, obviously very surprised and pleased to see Michael there. I know he had some earlier business in the day with the Daytona 500, and his guy, Bubba, almost won. But, you know, to see these people make that effort to get there and to see them recognized and just kind of let people get a bigger view of the NBA as a whole, and not just, you know, today's players in this weekend, but the bigger picture, and I think that was really cool.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought the Jason Tatum tweet, because that was really cool. He basically said he's not worthy enough to belong with those other, you know, Celtics greats that are pictured there: Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, Kevin McHale, and Kevin Garnett. Shaq had
Ray in the picture, Casey?
What's that?
Was Ray in the picture?
I thought he was. Maybe I missed.
I'd be kind of surprised.
I don't know if Ray was in the picture. I know there was a lot of people on social media that showed Kevin Garnett look basically biting his lip. Not talking to Ray.
Given how that ended, I'd be kind of surprised if Ray was in that picture.
Did I miss see that? I was on a roll there too.
That was the wrong thing. Wait,
My bad. That's Chief. My bad. I glanced at it quickly.
Robert Parrish. Yeah.
So Chief, former Bull, Robert Parrish. I'm just kidding, but he was a former Bull. Paul Pierce, Kevin McHale, and Kevin Garnett. My bad and good catch. But you slowed my roll there, Rob. But nice editing. So beyond that, Shaq had an incredible monologue, which Rob, you probably, or maybe you've caught up to it on Twitter, like on TNT. You were obviously.
I did see it. Yeah, I did see it.
And Will, you make a great point. It's like the reverence that players, no matter the era, are now showing for those that came before them, I think is astounding, because you saw it in the Jason Tatum tweet. You saw it, Shaq paying homage to the people that came before him with the TNT monologue. And then you really saw it, and this is where I want to kick it to you, Rob, with the reverence of Michael's, you know, appearance. I mean, hugging Luka Doncic and Karl Anthony Towns running over just to be around greatness, LeBron's face lighting up. I mean, the dude still has an incredibly palpable pulse. So what was your kind of take as someone who was in the arena of seeing that scene of Michael showing up?
Well, it was very surprising, right? And Will, you alluded to why it was surprising. And even without the Daytona dynamic, Michael's just not out much, at least to my eye. Like, he doesn't make these grand public appearances very often. So it certainly added to the gravity, I think, of the entire ceremony. The energy in the arena definitely changed. Obviously, you know, uproarious applause, ovation, cheers, whatever you want to call it. You know, and that was true, I think, of a lot of the guys, like, kind of regardless of, you know, past rivalries or whatever you want to say. There was a true celebratory feel to the NBA 75 part of it, even if earlier in the day, you know, you had Steph getting booed during his All-Star introduction. Draymond, everywhere that I went where I happened to be in the same space as Draymond Green, he was hearing it all weekend, and he drinks that in. So, yeah, Michael going last especially and making this dramatic entrance where even if you didn't know that he was at the Daytona 500, I think you were still surprised just to see him in the flesh there. And while, you know, we're far away, we couldn't, like, really quite see the nature of the full interaction, interactions that he was having with guys on the stage or off to the side. You catch up with that a little bit on social media, but to see him bantering with Dennis Rodman and Magic Johnson and, like, a lot of these guys, you know, I'd love to talk to one of them, but I imagine they would, you know, have this feeling, at least this is what it looked like from the outside, that, like, when you get all these guys, these legends back in a room together, especially those that played either together or in the same era, I'm sure it has that feeling that no time at all has passed, because you still see that competitive streak in MJ. My favorite clip that I saw was him and Magic kind of going at each other in the hallway after. So, yeah, it was just really, really cool. I was really glad I got to be there for that. It really is one of those kind of landmark moments in NBA history to have that much gravity in one room together. Like, so many of these guys are just, like, larger than life to me, and I know it's a lot of people. So for them to all be assembled like that was really a powerful thing.
Two more All-Star Weekend topics before we get to the Bulls at the break, which is the topic du jour. Rob was paid to be there Saturday night, so he had to watch all the All-Star events. Will, how many did you make? How many of those events did you make it through? And thoughts on the formats and the execution of the three big contests from All-Star Saturday night?
The All-Star Saturday night, I think, has at least this format with the skills, the three-point, and the dunk, I feel like has kind of run its course. To me, right now, the three-point contest is the highlight. And so I think, you know, they've done a nice job of tweaking that. But, you know, when you have a dunk contest where it's taking guys four, five, six tries to make their shot, it loses the excitement, you know, and some of the dunks they're trying, I get it. You know, it's just, you're trying to take everything to the next level, but it kind of just becomes a yawner. And, you know, I watch the skills challenge and I understand they're trying to tinker with that, but I'm not even sure how engaged the people in the stands were during that. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, if this is the showcase event for the NBA, which we all know it is, they have to do something regarding the dunk contest. You know, we've seen what it can be. But if this truly is what we want it to be, and that's not only the game, which is, let's be honest, an exhibition. But we want to get the best players in the dunk contest. The NBA, in my opinion, I think is going to have to start putting some of their own money in it to make the pot big enough to where you can't do an interview with these guys on the bench and talk about the slam dunk contest with guys that should be in it. You have to find a way to get them in it, offer enough money. And the one thing you think, Casey, I'll ask you this question. Remember how players used to always talk about, yeah, I'm going to take the All-Star game off and I'm not going to play. And then they got a call from David Stern and they're like, hey, look who's at the All-Star game. Does Adam Silver need to step up a little bit and kind of step in and maybe talk to these players about, you know, participating in some of these events to really showcase the NBA and this, you know, not the skills, but the dunk? Because I think all of us, now you got people talking about, well, let's just do away with the dunk contest.
Yeah, I mean, before I kick it to Rob, I'll just say, you know, to me, the dunk contest is totally hit or miss. Like, it can be special, as we've seen with Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon and Michael Jordan, Dominique Wilkins, and many other iterations. And then it can be a complete dud, like it was Saturday night. The three-point, I think, is consistently great. I mean, I'd like to see Steph Curry in it every year. He chose not to participate this year, but it was still a fantastic theater because you got a big man winning it. And then the skills, I'll kick to Rob before I answer your question, Rob, or I'm sorry, Will, by saying, you know, the dunk is the one that's the potential to be a massive dud. And I just don't know if money would solve that. I understand what you're asking with the commissioner maybe getting involved, but you know, some of these guys, there's so much, you know, on the line in terms of their health. And, you know, dunk contest takes a little bit something out of you. And you need to be creative and you need to be spontaneous and athletic. So I don't know. I don't know what the solution is, but I will agree with you that it needs to be fixed. As does, in my opinion, the skills challenge. Rob, how bad was that?
It was terrible. I mean, I have to be honest about it. It was nonsensical. The format made no sense. If you weren't watching, I mean, I should ask you guys what the TV experience was like, because in the arena, there's absolutely no way to know what in the world is going on. There's you know, these floating circles running everywhere. Guys are running back and forth and bobbing and weaving and running into each other, and they're bricking threes. And there's to me, the skills challenge is always going to have the least draw because it's the least flashy between, you know, 3-point shooting and dunking, you know, especially if you have a lot of star talent in either one of those. But to me, I didn't think the old format was really broken. I still think there were, you know, some fun moments in skill challenge history with the way that it was set up before. They went for it. They went for something. I think they went for the team thing to try to build some kind of, you know, rooting interest type situation. But then you get down to like the score. It felt like Family Feud. It was like this, you get 100 for this, but you get 200 for this. And now you're tied. And the team Giannis gets the tiebreaker for no reason in particular. Like, It was bizarre. I'm like turning into I'm turning into a grump talking about the skill challenge. But that really was like, it just made no sense, especially watching it in the arena. I will say, when you talk about fixing the dunk contest, Casey, and this is something I was going to ask you, Will, but you kind of answered it as you were talking, was it just feels to me like there needs to be some way to incentivize the real top flight talent, top flight dunkers to participate. And this isn't a shot at guys like Obi Toppin, Jalen Green, who like Cole Anthony. Like, I don't want to totally denigrate them because they participated and, you know, they put forth their best effort, and, you know, it's unfortunate the way it turned out. Obi, I actually thought was okay, but, you know, he's like a good third place finisher in a good year. You know what I mean? Third or fourth. That wasn't necessarily like a winning performance when you look back at even ones in my memory, in recent memory, the Zach Aaron Gordon one. I even thought the Derrick Jones Jr. one, if I remember correctly, was a decent dunk contest, the one in Chicago back in 2020. I don't know what the answer is, though, because I wonder, and Will, you might be able to speak better to this, do you think there's an injury concern from a player perspective? Is it fear of public humiliation? Is it, you know, what is it that has led to guys not necessarily seeming to want to be a part of this? I think if we can answer that question, then we can answer how to incentivize it better and hopefully bring it back. Because it is something where, Casey, as you mentioned, the ceiling of it to be iconic is really, really high if it's done right. And it would do a lot for the league if they were able to do that. I just don't necessarily know how.
Yeah, I don't know so much about injury, because some of the dunks they do in the All-Star game, some of the dunks they do in games in the regular season.
Yeah.
But I think it's just this image of, well, I just don't want to be known as a dunker. I'm a complete player. I could do more than dunk. And I'm just not sure where that came from, because it's just, you know, like you talk about, KC, it's not even, I mean, Jordan and Dominique were one of the best dunk contests ever, but also I don't have it in front of me, but I just remember the field as a whole, you know, was some of the best players in the league, period. So
Was in that contest.
Yeah. And wasn't Larry Nance?
I'd have to double check. I don't know what year he was in.
In that one, but I just, it's just one of those ones where, you know, just guys now are so concerned, in my opinion, about their image and how people perceive them and what type of players that they are. And, you know, as you talk about, Rob, there's just got to be a way, I don't know what it is outside of money, to incentivize these guys. And Casey, even if you don't necessarily give the guys the money, but if you give the money to their foundation, all these guys now have their own, you know, foundations and charitable, you know, institutions that they could incentivize by, okay, hey, guess what? Which also helps the league. You know, if you participate in a dunk contest and you win, we'll give your charity $500,000. You know, it's just one of those things. You got to figure out something that you're like, okay, how is this a win-win for the league and the individuals that participate?
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement on that, that there needs to be something to get the field probably a little bit juiced up for the dunk. Real quick, Rob, because we want to spend the majority of this podcast getting into the Bulls of the break, but just quick summary of the Bulls' participation in All-Star Weekend. You wrote a great column at NBCSportsChicago.com drawing the obvious connection between the difference of this event 2 years ago when it was held in Chicago and the Bulls were kind of off the NBA radar map, so to speak, and just the relevance that they stand both in the league and at this event over the weekend.
Yeah, so having two All-Stars is obviously massive. It's the first time they'd had one or had that in 5 years, Zach and DeMar. Not only are Zach and DeMar in the game, now they're not Steph Curry hitting the 16 threes. They're not LeBron hitting the game winner. They weren't in the MVP conversation, but both of them closed the game and, you know, had their fingerprints on it, had highlights. And, you know, it did feel like a kind of coming into the limelight in terms of like showcasing their ascent moment for the Bulls. There was buzz around the Bulls all weekend. I was saying this on the radio this morning. I don't think the sense about this team nationally is that they're a cute story. And I don't think it's that they're, you know, at the forefront of the championship contender conversation, but I think it's something in the middle where, you know, this team has legitimately either changed a lot of people's minds or impressed a lot of people to the point that they're being taken very seriously. We're going to get into this into the second half of the season conversation, but a lot of it, you know, is based on health, obviously. So that was big. The All-Star game, I alluded to this briefly earlier. I think the Elam ending is just a home run. They obviously have incorporated some of the foundation type stuff in the first three quarters, where, you know, if you win a quarter, you know, the charity that you're playing for gets X amount of money. And that does, you know, there were still moments where it felt like a traditional All-Star game, not a lot of defense being played, guys just kind of loping up and down the court. In the last minute or two of quarters, you see it get competitive. But once that target score, you know, gets in effect, you know, it really, really gets competitive. So that was a lot of fun. And it was fun to see, again, Zach and DeMar make some highlights in that context. They also had their little one-on-one matchup at the beginning of the game. Zach hits his three. DeMar just rims out a mid-range jumper over him. So that was fun. I'm sure they had fun with that. And then Io on Friday was the other big one. They changed the Rising Stars format this year to make it a 14 tournament, also instituted the target score format. And it made that pretty competitive too, to the point where Io almost injured his thumb, jammed it on the rim there. But early indications on that are not that it's anything serious. So fans can take a deep breath on that, barring anything, you know, significant changing. It looks like he's totally fine there. And Io held his own in the Rising Stars game. Talked in typical Io fashion about how it was, you know, humbling and an honor, but it has to just be a stepping stone to something greater. It has to be a rung on the ladder, but a low one where he continues to ascend further and further. That's, again, very typical Io. And then you know, Zach and DeMar talking, just kind of reasserting the Bulls as, you know, kind of a contender, making their case in that respect. DeMar talking about the clarity and balance that he's found in his career, calling this All-Star selection the validation from it, perhaps the top one of his career. And he's been to five games. He's now started three. That was significant. Zach just talking about, you know, I did ask him a little bit about the comparison between that Chicago year and now. Obviously the difference is night and day for him, not only because of the team situation, and he's not really, you know, having to deal with a crap hand that he's being dealt, a cards he's working with a stack deck now to a degree. So there's that. And also just Zach being a two-time All-Star now, you know, I would catch parts of the TV broadcast. It seems like he's in every other commercial these days. Like his own star has risen as the Bulls has gone up, and it's kind of a product of what he's always said, but now it's coming to fruition, which was, you know, if you win, everything comes with it. So for Zach, that's a cool thing. I'm sure for Bulls fans who have followed this team dutifully throughout the rebuild, it's a cool thing and a cool culmination for the moment. But not a true culmination because, you know, in two or three days time here, the second half of the season is going to start, the stretch run gets underway, and then we start talking about, you know, a difficult end of season schedule in the postseason. But in a weekend of celebration, I thought for the whole NBA, for the NBA's history, for a lot of different aspects of things, I think the Bulls were pretty well celebrated in their own right, which was at once refreshing and also a little jarring to see, because when you think about that Chicago game being only 2 years ago, how quickly things have flipped with this new front office, it's pretty remarkable. And the weekend was a little bit of a reminder of that.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, so there you go. There's a wrap on All-Star Weekend. We should get into Bulls at the break now. That's really the meat of this podcast, and we're going to start with you, Will. The Bulls sit 38-21 at the break, percentage, or actually same record as the Heat, so he'd have the tiebreaker there, so they're technically second in the East. They enter with a five-game win streak. And I want to spend the majority of this conversation looking forward. And let's stop calling it the second half and call it the stretch run. It's 23 games. That's like nothing.
Yep.
I want to spend the majority of it looking forward, but I do want to take one look back, and I'm going to kick this to both of you, and I'll then offer my opinion. Biggest surprise from the first 59 games of the season, Will?
I was surprised how quickly this team came together. And I know there was that stretch. I think it was, and this was something that Arturos alluded to around the trade deadline. You know, it's a small sample size, but 14 games. What they were able to do when they were full strength offensively and defensively. The impact of DeMar, obviously, but probably even more significant, in my opinion, was the impact of Caruso. Also, you know, Ball, in my opinion, fitting in seamlessly, but just the impact that Caruso's had on this team along with Ball on the defensive end of the floor and the intensity of which they played with, you know, in my opinion, highlighted Zach's ability to play that way and to play defense. Some of that I fully believe had to do with, you know, the Olympics and what they asked him to do. But now I think Zach getting that understanding of this is how we have to play, how I have to play every single night to seriously be taken as one of the best players or be considered one of the best players in the league, not just a scorer, not a guy that has potential on defense, but a guy that can fulfill that potential offensively and defensively and start being called a two-way player. So, you know, we know we've been dealt with the injuries and we know what's coming up, but that in itself was impressive to me. I feel like the Bulls moved the goalpost. And if if everybody can get healthy and they can get back to playing that way, I think you have to, they could be, as you know, and on a whole, be taken seriously as a contender.
Rob, biggest surprise from the first 59 to you?
Got to be DeMar. I mean, I was never someone who doubted that he was going to fit on this team. The reasons that they brought him in made a lot of sense, strictly, you know, speaking basketball wise, you know, his ability to draw fouls, you know, be a responsible half court playmaker, you know, high assist, low turnover guy, a second shot creator next to Zach LaVine. All that made sense. And I wasn't, again, I also wasn't somebody who thought he was over the hill necessarily, because he was playing quietly at a very high level in San Antonio. I just did not see the highest scoring averages of his career, on nearly the highest true shooting percentage of his career, on nearly the highest usage of his career. I just didn't see that coming. 28, 5, and 5 to be in a class. I haven't checked this since the break, but basically, you know, at one point or another, it's basically him, LeBron, Embiid, Giannis, and Luka, depending on what day you check, are the guys averaging those, you know, splits. 28 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. Breaking, doing things that Wilt Chamberlain has never done. The way that he's just carried this team on his back for so much of the season, through as much as adversity as they've had, which nobody could have predicted, you know, the COVID adversity, the injury adversity that they face. Even, you know, not being, you know, even not having low expectations for DeMar, everything that he's done has pretty much blown me away. I mean, Casey, we talk about it on a nightly and weekly basis on the podcast. So I'd have to say him, mostly because I can't say the defense anymore because it slips so much with the with guys. So.
All right. Well, this is remarkable. Good podcasting, because we're going to have three different answers, which I did not expect. I'm going to go with Ayo Dosunmu, who I had pegged for Windy City Bulls action for a majority of the season. And now, to me, it's like, I get it, man. He's a rookie, and maybe you can't count him in the playoffs, but it's going to be like when Ball and Caruso, let's assume Ball and Caruso get back to full strength. Like, you got to still find minutes for that dude. That's how good he's been. And I did not see that coming, man. To me, the more that guy that you've thrown at that guy, the more he's responded. It's pretty clear he's going to be a double-digit veteran in this league, because he's got length, size, physicality, screen navigation, just kind of that it factor that makes an impact at both ends. He may not wow you always with stats, but he just makes a lot of right plays, and he's around a lot of – winning ingredients for basketball. So that to me would be the biggest surprise. I don't think, I think both of your guys' answers are spot on. I mean, I think we all three are right. I mean, it's amazing how DeMar has played, and I agree with you, Will. I wrote many times that chemistry was going to be a big question mark. And, you know, before we wrap up the look back, you know, one guy we didn't mention here is Nikola Vucevic, and I would kind of lump him into what you were saying, Will, because a big storyline going into the season was who's going to have to sacrifice and how they're going to handle the different loads with three primary score options. And I think Nikola Vucevic has done a fantastic job of, obviously, he had the shooting struggles, but just kind of, you know, picking his spots and seeding to those guys. And now with Zach out, has really, really upped his game. But let's look forward. 23 games to go. As I mentioned, they're tied with the Heat. Atop the East, although the Heat had the tiebreaker. I posted a story this morning at NBCSportsChicago.com looking ahead at the final 23 games, the stretch run, and I singled out three areas that to me jump out as the main storylines. You can comment on those or go wherever you want, Will, but the three that I mentioned were health being obvious, an obvious one. Will Zach's knee hold up? What kind of shape will Caruso, Ball, and Williams, you know, come to the rotation in, and what kind of rhythm they will come to the rotation in? And then also strength of schedule. They have a very, very difficult final 23 games, and they have not fared well against the elite opponents, quite frankly. And then lastly, kind of how the rotation shakes down with these guys getting back. A lot of people have proven they can handle minutes. You've got a new signee in Tristan Thompson also arriving. You got guys coming back, getting healthy at some point on projections. So Billy and his staff have a lot on their plate to figure out how that rotation, and as we all know, that rotation typically shortens as you get to the playoffs. So those to me jump out as big storylines, but I've babbled long enough. Will, where's your focus on for these final 23 games?
Well, one of the things I wrote down that I went back, and I have a tendency to – take notes, just like you guys do for Billy's post-game press conferences. You know, sometimes. Unfortunately, I don't usually get to see the pregame ones because we're doing our production meetings, and then, you know, we always do a piece on it, but that's about the only, you know, part I get to see when we do our pregame show. But, you know, one of the things that I wrote down, and I kind of took this from what Billy was talking about, you know, for these last 23 games, I think that the Bulls as a whole, meaning the team, I think the coaches are doing this already, but I think that they need to start stressing this to the players, is to stop talking about who's not playing, most notably Ball and Caruso, and really focus on these last 23 games. Make it about establishing and maintaining a style of play and a level of physicality, regardless of who's on the floor. Because I know they're like, well, things will change when Ball and Caruso get back. And I believe that 100%. But at the same time, you still there's still a style of play that shouldn't change regardless of who's on the floor. And this team needs to become more physical, especially now, as you talk about, you know, this schedule that they have. It's the second most difficult schedule in the league remaining. Milwaukee's the only team ahead of them. So, I mean, you come straight out of the chute. You got the Hawks, the Grizzlies, the Heat, the Hawks again, then the Bucks, then the Sixers, before you really get to take your breath and play the Detroit Pistons. I mean, I'm looking at this, these last 23 games, I'm dividing it into three segments. And I took my time before the podcast to do this. I mean, those first eight games are games that, you know, it's like you're being thrown to the wolves. Because then, like I say, after that Detroit game, then you got Cleveland, who nobody's really talking about because they made their trade, you know, a week before the trade deadline. People have already forgotten about that. So it's just the East, and we talked about this in the last podcast. I think there's been a shift of power how tough the East is. And then you think about this. You go after those first eight games, you go on the road for nine games. And it's not like, you know, you get the luxury of, and I'm going to Washington, Orlando, where they have struggled. But, I mean, you're going to Sacramento, Utah, Phoenix, Milwaukee, Cleveland, New York. Now, you got New Orleans, Washington, but that's a tough stretch. And then when you come home, there's no rest. Clippers, Heat, Bucks, Boston, Charlotte, at Minnesota. This is where I'm kind of holding my breath on one hand, because I love the fact that Zach went and got a second opinion. I love the fact that he got the clearance to play. I love the fact that he really was dying to play and wanted to play and talked about the importance of the All-Star game to him and about how he feels like he deserves to be there, even though everybody else is allowed to have their own opinion. I had no problem with him being there, but we need him in all these games. And I think that unlike Milwaukee, unlike Brooklyn, Philly needs some work. But we're one of those teams, in my opinion, we need to win as many games as possible, as you talked about, to maintain that chemistry, to work on developing that physicality, that style of play. Because a number of guys that have not been in the playoffs yet have zero games of experience. And so we need to be playing our best basketball heading into the playoffs. Take these 23 games and approach them like they're playoff games, which means that the focus has to be better. The effort has to be better. You really have to be disciplined. Now every possession is important, because, and the last thing I'll say is, you look at the standings, as we just talked about, let's say you take those first eight games, Hawks, Grizzlies, Heat, Hawks, Bucks, 76ers, Detroit, Cleveland. Hypothetically, let's just say you go 4-4, all right? You're going from tied for first to sixth.
Yeah.
And you're like, what just happened? We even lost home. We went from first to even losing home court advantage. So that's why I've never seen a schedule like this. I've never seen where the East has been so, I'm sure there has been, but so jumbled up. And that's why all these games are so important. And I tip their hat for winning those games heading into the All-Star break. It wasn't impressive, but they did what they had to do.
Yeah.
So I hope these guys are refreshed. I hope mentally they're ready to roll. because they're being thrown right into the fire, and they're going to be tested every single night.
And Casey, let me piggyback quickly on the standings point, because I'm looking at the standings right now. Will, to your point, the Bulls are obviously tied in first with Miami at 38-21. In fifth, 2.5 games back, are the Milwaukee Bucks. In sixth, 4.5 games back, are the Boston Celtics. In seventh, 5 games back, are Toronto. And then in eighth, I mean, seven games back is a long way back in eighth, but that's the Brooklyn Nets. Like, you know, when they get fully assembled, they're going to be dangerous too. And for the Bulls, from a seeding perspective, because we talk about we all know the story of the abysmal record against Miami, Philly. Milwaukee's a bad matchup. They've lost their only matchup with them this season. Cleveland is even a bad matchup. Like, I don't think they'd be an easy out in the playoffs. I'd pick the Bulls, but it wouldn't be an easy series by any stretch. The Bulls, quietly, I don't know how much this is talked about, but they're a team that's 23-8 at home this season, one of the best home records in the NBA, 15-13 on the road. The United Center home court advantage is back to a degree, and not only from a matchup perspective, like you probably want to play one of these play-in teams if you can. I'm not saying the play-in teams, because it's Toronto, it's Brooklyn, it's even Charlotte and Atlanta are feisty. Like, I'm not saying those are easy teams to oust, but you certainly would rather be playing them in a first-round series than a Milwaukee, Philly, Boston, Miami. And then you add in the home court advantage element. It's really, 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 really going to behoove the Bulls to stay at least in the top four, if not the top two, so that you get, whoever gets through the play-in tournament. And to do that, I just would echo everything Will says about, you know, setting the foundation, playing with intensity, like building habits. This is all coach stuff that Billy will, I'm sure, tell us when we ask him about the stretch run of the season when we're back talking to guys. To me, like, of all of the Eastern Conference contenders, because the Bulls are the most unproven as a group, because it's a new team and there are a lot of guys without much playoff experience on the team. Zach, Lonzo, Vooch has been in a couple first round series, but it's really DeMar and Tristan Thompson and then Caruso, obviously having won the championship, that are the guys that have the deep postseason experience. To me, it's really, really incumbent on the Bulls more than almost any other Eastern Conference contender to nail the stretch run of the season so that they can stay near the top. And it won't be easy to stay near the top, given how cramped the standings are.
But the funny thing is that this was rattling around my brain when Will was talking, is, you know, what if they somehow stay miraculously at 1 or 2 and they draw Brooklyn in the first round?
That's a meat grinder, man.
that's the crazy thing about the East, and that's Will's point. It's spot on. The seeding and your first round opponent, there's going to be a really good team going home in the East in the first round. Let's just put it that way. Rob, I'm going to kick it to you real quick, but one other thing I wanted to quickly comment on about the Wilson, and I quite frankly do not know if this is a good thing or bad thing. I'm kind of leaning towards it's a bad thing, but Will made a great point about style of play and how you need to establish that, particularly as you head into the playoffs. I actually think, at least in the regular season, one of this team's strengths is they have the ability to win in different ways stylistically. In the Ball and Caruso format, you saw them wreaking havoc defensively, scoring in transition off opponents' turnovers. And now, I mean, again, this is probably a bad thing, but I personally love it. I mean, they're just winning like 135 to 128. I mean, this is just like incredible offensive basketball. Their shooting percentages are ridiculous. I looked up today, they're first in the league in field goal percentage, second in three-point percentage, first in free throw percentage, second in true shooting percentage. I mean, this is just an incredibly gifted offensive team. But they're winning shootouts, which, as Will knows and we all know, is not sustainable in the playoffs. So, Rob, where's your focus on these final 23 games?
Yeah, I think we hit the strength of schedule and the seeding stuff. I guess it's the health, but there's not really much to analyze right now, right, as it relates to Caruso and Ball and Patrick Williams. You know, we've been kind of loosely, although the team hasn't really said anything, we've been loosely eyeing kind of a mid-March type of window for Pat, right? Because that's right in the middle of the 4 to 6 month timeline that was that the team gave when he first had his surgery. I think he'll be the player that I'm watching most closely when they come back from their respective long absence, because obviously he's a second-year player coming off a traumatic injury. And, you know, we thought of Patrick Williams as a big swing piece coming into the season anyway. So it's almost like you have the same level of focus on him as if the season was just beginning for him today. Like, we kind of know, you know, obviously it'll be worth watching if Lonzo and Caruso are at all hampered, and it'll take them a couple games to get the rhythm back, obviously. But they're a little bit more of a known commodity than Patrick Williams. So it'd be interesting to see what he looks like and what it looks like the ceiling of what he can bring down the stretch and in a postseason environment is, if and when he returns, because just a lot of, you know, a lot of the evaluation of him is unknown and guesswork and theoretical at this point. And then the other thing on the health perspective is Zach. I mean, you know, I asked him about it after the All-Star game last night, you know, just making sure that the knee was all good, that there was no kind of nothing funny there during the game, because he was playing in that competitive portion at the end in the fourth quarter. He did have the big dunk. And he kind of laughed it off and just said, did I look okay? You know, the 360 looked all right. So, you know, he's bouncy right now, and he certainly is riding the high of the treatment that he recently got. But him and Billy have both acknowledged that once the stretch run of the season starts and he starts, you know, after missing the three games before the break, he starts playing games again, there's going to be a conversation about a management plan for him down the stretch, whether it be, you know, limiting him in back-to-backs, maybe rest nights. So to me, what happens with Zach once he starts playing games again, obviously the last thing you want is for the knee discomfort or anything to flare back up. There seems to be confidence that he's got it to a place where it's manageable for the rest of the season. But we just have to see, because all this stuff is nebulous and unpredictable. So to me, almost as much as waiting for the guys that are on the shelf to get back is seeing how Zach responds in those first couple games back. Because Will, as you said earlier, he's as important as anybody to this team, and having him for the stretch run, obviously, you know, does a ton for the team on the court. He just adds so much just by even being there, but he also can take a little bit off of DeMar's shoulders, because as superhuman as DeMar has been this season, you don't want him to need to score 35 points on over 50% shooting every night to win games, which is what the Bulls have needed for the last few weeks. It's great. It's been tremendously fun to watch, but it's in the best interest in the team making a deep postseason run if him and DeMar can be, and obviously Vucevic and everybody down the line can be working in enough concert that you can get back to what it was at the beginning of the season, Casey, as you mentioned, where they're winning in different ways. They're winning with contributions from different people. That is a little bit more, to me, sustainable when you talk about how guys are going to hold up deep into a postseason run, which are the aspirations the Bulls have. So those are the main points that I'm looking at from a health perspective.
Yeah, well, I'm kicking to you because I've seen you furiously scribbling notes. I have a question for you, but I want you to just go, because I've seen you jotting down things as Rob was talking, and then I have a follow-up question for you. So go.
Well, I'm curious for you guys, because I want to lean on you guys because you're around more. And, you know, I will go back and get on social media and look up some of Billy's to get the full postgame press conference, or to get the, you know, the 5:15 pregame press conference, you know, to kind of watch what he says, exactly how he words things, how he responds to questions. But I'm curious for you guys, because you guys spend so much time around them and you guys get a better sense of the vibe. You know, it's a two-part question. I think to this point, I think Billy has done a really good job of how he's been very delicate, how he's answered questions regarding, you know, standing up for guys, protecting guys, protecting the team, you know, not throwing guys up under the bus, but occasionally, you know, massaging an answer so that guys take notice to, hey, we got to do better. And I think the players have been very honest that, for the most part, you know, responding about things they need to do better. But I'm curious for you guys, if now that we're in this stretch run and there's 23 games left, and the quality of the opponents that we're playing, and, you know, as I talked about and you guys have followed up on about, you know, maintaining that style of play and being more aggressive and physical, if you think that Billy now will kind of start turning the heat up a little bit, you know, with some of these games, if they don't play as well as we all hope and anticipate, and not to the sense of, you know, start mentioning guys by name and throwing them under the bus, but, you know, be a little more stern with his answers. And, you know, is there somebody besides DeMar that, I'm not saying that these guys aren't being held accountable, but I think that the accountability now needs to be on the forefront. And it's something that these guys really need to take, you know, responsibility for. And I think Tristan Thompson will help that dramatically. But is he the guy that's really going to help DeMar in getting these guys ready and focused along with Caruso on the playoffs? Or is there somebody that I'm not thinking about that you guys have seen, have dealt with, you know, in stories, post-game interviews, that, you know, hey, you might be surprised. This is a guy that's going to, you know, make a significant difference because of his voice.
Well, I'll go first. So my eyes are on Caruso mostly, just because obviously He's such an effective communicator. You hear that from his teammates all the time. And he's such a, you know, got the coach on the floor mentality. And then obviously, you know, has the experience of as deep of a playoff run as you can have with the championship with in LA. So my eyes are mostly there. I do think Tristan's voice will help. And then DeMar, and then tying it into Billy, because let's not forget, man, you know, I know it was his first season when he was still leading the league. And I know it was a incredible team he inherited, but Billy has coached a conference finalist. I think he has and you know, made the playoffs. Was it 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 5? I should know that in OKC.
I think made the playoffs every year. Yeah. So because he made the playoffs with the Chris Paul team, they just lost.
Right. So 5 out of 5. And you know, I like your analysis of Billy, Will, and I don't claim to know Billy incredibly well, because the first season I spent with him was on Zoom, and I definitely have gotten to know him better this season. But I did a lot of, you know, back reference and research on him, and talked to people that have dealt with him in the past from a media perspective, and that knew him well from the Thunder organization. And he is a relentlessly positive guy. That's just how he's wired. I do think when a message needs to be sent, I agree with you, he sends it. The where my mind goes to, and I know it's a completely different team and completely different circumstances, but there was a game early last season, and I wrote this column, where he said it was a horrendous home loss. Wendell Carter was probably getting dunked on left and right. I'm sorry to throw you under the bus, Wendell. Just like them, that's where the mind goes. I mean, it wasn't just Wendell, it was everybody was bad. But he kept hammering the pronoun they after the game. It was not we, it was they. Like, you young players, you got to figure this out, man. This is, you know, and so when he wants to get a message across, I really think he can. I do think this is a very serious-minded team. You mentioned how much we're around it. That's the vibe I get from it. I do think they hold each other accountable, and there is a genuine closeness. So you're right. Zach having no playoff experience is a major storyline. But I don't know, man. I have a feeling they have a big enough collective chip on their shoulders and have enough of a care factor that I think they're going to be able to navigate that.
Yeah, and I'll add, I think I'm comfortable saying that I don't know on how Billy will handle it in terms of a messaging perspective in the stretch run towards a playoff run, because we haven't seen it yet in Chicago. I mean, last year there was kind of a haphazard play-in push, but Zach going out, kind of they weren't really in the running for a lot of the stretch run of the season. So I don't know if I can comfortably say that his tone shifted a ton there. Obviously, the stakes are much higher and much more serious. Now, Casey, my mind goes the same place you did. DeMar and Caruso are the accountability guys. They set the tone. They're who guys look to. I think Zach has the potential to be that type of guy because he commands so much respect in the locker room. It's just about leading by example and playing, as you've described, Will, the way that they need to play, you know, from a physicality perspective, from a defensive perspective, down the stretch. And then, you know, we get into the, you know, it's a line to walk with Zach, right? Because as much as he does command that type of respect, this is all going to be new experience for him too. And he's been candid about that, about how he's still learning from DeMar in terms of, you know, how to win games, how to have winning habits. And then all that stuff gets multiplied exponentially in the postseason. So I think there's the potential for Zach to be that type of guy, at least leading by example. But it'll be interesting to see how he walks that line of, you know, experiencing all this for the first time while still trying to be a little bit more of a vocal leader. I think he's been on an upward trajectory in that sense. Really, I guess I've only been around for 3 seasons, but I really noticed it jump last season, and then it's taken even another level this season in terms of how seriously he's taken that. But I want to read you guys a quote from DeMar from last night. It was the last question we asked him in his post-game interview after the All-Star game on the importance of the kind of stretch run of the season. He said, I've been in guys' ears just expressing to them the importance of getting to this place and understanding this moment. Understanding after the All-Star break, everything goes like that, snapped his fingers. You're going to be able to see the separation from the good teams, the okay teams, and the great teams that are fighting for something. What position do we want to put ourselves in? That's the next challenge for us. We got an opportunity to get back healthy, get some guys back, and we're going to have our opportunity. So that, I mean, that message, I'm fascinated to see how this team responds to that, especially with the team still not fully whole, with the schedule stiffening up and the pressure on the sense that, like you said, Will, if you have a bad 5 to 10 game stretch, you can go from first to sixth in the blink of an eye. And that's kind of what DeMar means. And the passage of time is one thing he means when he says it goes like that. But I think it could also be kind of a double entendre referring to how cramped the standings are. So Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how Billy will handle that in a public-facing way. Like you said, Casey, if he needs to get a message across, he will get it across. But DeMar and Caruso are the example setters that I'm looking at, and it makes it even more of a bummer that Caruso's hurt, because as much as he still is a vocal presence, a guy that's around on the sidelines, he's in guys' ears, I'd imagine, Will, you could speak to this from a player perspective better, but it has to be different when you have a coach on the floor type guy, a guy who's has a leadership kind of gravitas within a team. It has to be different when they're actually out on the court with guys versus, you know, saying all those things and giving all that guidance from a bench position.
Oh, there is. And I think that that's why it's important for these guys to start traveling together full time, even the guys that aren't playing. So they're present and around this team so that when a guy turns around, he sees Lonzo there. He sees Caruso. He knows that these guys are a part of the team. And not that these guys would forget about him, but it's just as long as you're there and present, sometimes, unfortunately, because you're so focused on the game and what's in front of you, out of sight, out of mind. And you come back to Chicago and then you see him in the practice facility and then you get, need to get updated on their situation. But I also love how Caruso literally stands up and is waiting for guys as they come off the floor, you know, talking to him about what he saw. But I will say this to kind of round out your question, Rob. Sometimes guys will get aggravated at a guy, even though they totally respect him. They appreciate the fact that they're getting in their ear. But when you're not out there playing because you're injured, it's not your fault. But sometimes that kind of wears on players a little bit because of the fact that they're out there busting their ass on the floor and they make a mistake. And, you know, they already know they've made a mistake. They don't need you whispering in their ear, this, 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 and this. So there could be some tension occasionally. But I do feel like, as KC talked about, this team, they really like each other. They get along very well. But I personally feel that I wanted to get your guys' feelings, and you just seconded it, that they have enough guys with voices that people respect. And respect is the big word, because you can always have guys that have voices that nobody listens to. But I think because of that experience, you've seen how well DeMar is playing. Caruso has the ring. Tristan Thompson, you know, what, Tristan's been to what, KC, five finals?
I think it's four, but I got to look
four,
that up.
Four 80, finals?
83 playoff games, more than anybody on the Bulls currently, even DeMar.
Right. So I think that he brings some value, and not just because he's a big that's going to be able to come off the bench and back these guys up. But I just think that now – And I don't want to say that he's the missing piece, but I think he addresses a need. I think this was awesome. It didn't cost him draft picks, trades, anything. You know, again, on the surface, we've got to give it a few games, but, you know, to make sure we cover the team, the coaches, and the front office, AK and these guys hit a home run. But I also think what this means more so than anything, look where Tristan Thompson went. And think about the choices that he had at his disposal. And at the end of the day, he came to Chicago.
No, it says a lot. And it ties in what we were talking about before, the relevance of the franchise as compared to All-Star Weekend 2022 and All-Star Weekend 2020. So two last quick points, and then I want to close with Will with a question. Will, you brought up the guys traveling. I will say I was in Charlotte. That was a one-game trip. Everybody was there but Lonzo Ball, and that's only because he was in the early stages of his rehab. Caruso was there at shoot-around, talking to guys, shooting shots with one hand. Williams was there. He's been traveling basically all season. So
Packer's been everywhere.
And yeah. Billy cited that exact point you did, Will, the connectivity of the team. That's why those guys are traveling, even though they're injured. He wants guys feeling connected. So Billy and the coaching staff and the whole franchise are on that point. Second point, I know it's not NBA playoffs, and that's where we're going to close with Will, but we're talking before about accountability and voices and experience. We did not mention, and we should, it. LaVine was at the Olympics last year, and I know it's not the NBA playoffs, but that was high-level stuff with high-level players, with a high-level coach, with a team full of people holding each other accountable, and he played a significant role in that gold medal performance. So that should at least be noted. But I want to close here. Will, you said you want to lean on us. You're the champion, man. We want to lean on you because everybody hears about how different playoff basketball is than regular season basketball. It's a buzzword. It's a cliche. I've written it a million times. I've never played in either an NBA regular season game or an NBA playoff game. You've played in both. You've played in multiple of the latter. How much different is it? And how do you see the Bulls handling that difference?
Well, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit on this, on the show, but for the guys that have never been in the playoffs, I mean, that first Monday, you know, because they play the Timberwolves on that Sunday, right? They're at Minnesota. They'll come back and they'll have a team meeting on Monday. And the first thing that they'll recognize, they'll drop this big-ass book in front of them that has about 75 pages of material. And these days, it may not be a book. It may just be, hey, we've already sent you guys, download what we've sent to your iPad, and it's going to be 75 pages of scouting reports on who they're going to play. Now, the good thing for them, which also could make things a little more difficult, is if they stay in that top two, you know, we could sit here and not know who they're going to play because of the play-in game. So they'll have an opportunity to kind of practice and really focus on themselves. But it's just the knowledge that you develop on your opponent, not just the team, but each individual. I mean, each player will receive, okay, you're guarding, in my case, I'm guarding Vucevic, right? Here's his top 10 favorite moves. 80% of the time when he's on the left block, he does this. 90% of the time when he's on the right block, he does this. I mean, you're just inundated with so much material to where you now have to spend almost all of your free time absorbing this, because there's a slight fear of, I don't want to be that guy. Because I was always with Phil Jackson and Greg Popovich, who would just throw stuff out at practice. Well, you're going to be guarding Olajuwon down on the left block. What does he do if he gets the ball down there and they cut off of him? What's his next move? And you got to know this stuff. And it's not just the regular season to where, hey, we know the opponent's top five plays. This is what we're going to try to do. It's only one game. The playoffs, and I talk to people about this all the time, the playoffs can flip. A seven-game series can flip on one game. One game. I don't know how many times I covered the finals for ESPN, and I remember specifically being in San Antonio, and they just wiped the floor with the Detroit Pistons in the first two games. And we're leaving AT&T Center. We're like, yep, we won't be coming back here. Oh, guess where we came back for game 6 and 7? Because of the ability of the coaching staff and the players to make changes from quarter to quarter, game to game, and just totally flip a series on its head. And that's why there's just playoffs are so different, because that can happen. How confident you could feel leaving the United Center after game one, but then how dejected you could feel leaving the United Center after game two, because of the adjustments that were made over a 24-hour to 48-hour window. And that's why I feel like this will actually help the team, because of the difficulty of their schedule, the quality of the opponents. Most of these teams are teams that they're going to be playing or quite possibly matched up against, like the Heat and the 76ers and the Nets and the Bucks, that they're already going to know what it's like to get into the playoffs, what playoff basketball is going to be like, how exhausted they're going to be mentally and physically. And all of a sudden they're going to go from, hey, regular season, you know, to this is hard. This is like, you know, it's just play to play, game to game, the focus and the intensity of what it's played from the tip. And unlike what's happened over the last five or six games in the regular season, where they've gotten off to a slow start and then they've been able to play themselves back in offensively and beat teams in the fourth quarter, if you think that's going to happen in the playoffs, it may happen one game, but you're not winning a seven-game series that way. You have to be ready to go from the jump. And that's something that I think these guys will learn. I think that's where the schedule and Billy and Caruso and Tristan Thompson and these guys will continue to hammer away with these guys about how difficult it is because you take nothing lightly. You take nothing, absolutely nothing for granted. And it's even though it's a 7-game series, it's like a 1-game series and then another 1-game series and then another 1-game series, because it's just, you never, ever feel comfortable, even though you may have beat somebody by 20 or 25 for whatever reason. It's just, you throw that game away and you start from scratch in the next game.
You said that a series can turn on one game. It can turn on one play. If LeBron James doesn't hit that game winner, Tom Thibodeau's still coaching the Bulls. No, he's not.
Well, I mean, it's as simple as it. What if Kevin Durant's foot's not on the 3-point line?
There you go. There it is.
There you go.
There it is.
Okay, that's got me fired up, Will. I'm not going to lie. I cannot wait for the playoffs this year. I really can't.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I think that, you know, sorry to cut you off, KC, but just – every single night, man. It's not like, oh, we got a little stretch here with Detroit and Washington and Orlando. I mean, it's just like, dude, blink, and you go from the Miami Heat to the Atlanta Hawks to the Milwaukee Bucks to the 76ers. I mean, it's just, you're going to wake up us as analysts, you know, beat guys. You're going to wake up every morning being like, all right, man, what's today got for us? Because it's not just like, oh, it's game 76. It's game 77. You know, it's going to be exciting. And then you just – all of a sudden the playoff starts, and it's like the guy out in the backyard just taking the charcoal fluid and just dumping it on the fire. And it just, you know, it goes up and it just explodes, because that's what it's like.
Well, what a great spot to be in, to be talking about what playoff basketball is like after having not covered it since 2017. So I think we can all agree on that. And, Rob, I talk to you all the time, so – thanks for coming on the Bulls Talk podcast. But Will, I talked to you enough on TV, but this was special, and we certainly value your insight and candor and expertise. So thank you for that. And we want to thank you for listening to the Bulls Talk podcast, because without you, we would not have a show. So along those lines, we hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast. Let me try that close again, Tony. You're gonna have to do some editing. We hope you enjoy.
Good Lord,
three, 3, 2, 1. We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.